Monitor, 67. Morgan, 37. And our guest, 74. He was born in New York in 1893. His nose is insured with Lloyd's of London for $1 million. That's who? The great Inkadinkadoo man, Jimmy Durante. And Jimmy will be with us in a couple of minutes. Something New by the Maurice Bauer Singers.
What's more American than cornflakes? The 4th of July and Uncle Sam. What's more American than baseball? I am. What's more American than toothpaste? Rock and roll, peanut butter, toast and jam. What's more American than okay?
So what's more American than the great Schnoz? Mr. Durante was 74 years old yesterday. He began the business in 1909, show business, playing ragtime piano at Coney Island. And he's always said that he's nobody's rival, which in our book means he's unrivaled. Here he is as interviewed by reporter Joe Hyder.
Jimmy, you've had a long and illustrious career, but I'm sure that you've had many a moment in show business that have been your greatest memories. Can you tell us about it?
Well, one of the highlights of my career was last Sunday when I received the CYO medal from Cardinal Spellman. That's one of the greatest honors that can come to any person.
Jimmy, at the age of 74, and God bless you, you're remarkable. This is usually the age reserved for people who want to retire. You don't even think about retiring, do you?
Well, thank God I got my health. And I think when you retire, you start to decay.
Where do you get so much of the energy?
Well, I don't know. I love being out on that floor, and that's where we have our fun with Sonny King, Eddie Jackson, who's been with me for about 45 years, and I got my same drummer with me. And we have a lot of fun on that floor. The minute that becomes work, then we'll all quit.
You do an awful lot of work for charity, don't you?
An awful lot. Yeah, I love it. I'm chairman of the Easter Seal
Foundation,
and the Eagles now have started this year with Jimmy Durante Children's Fund.
Jimmy, what about vaudeville days? Which was the greatest act that you've seen?
The great, great act that was Ethel Barrymore when I caught her at the Palace. God, she thrilled you. Really thrilled you. Oh, there was Eddie Cantor. It was my boy.
You've got a lot of great memories, haven't you?
Yeah. With Eddie Cantor especially, you know, he was a singing waiter and I was a piano player down at Coney Island. in 1912. That was 50 years ago. But that was the last cafe job he ever worked.
Jimmy, the studios of NBC are familiar to you. You've come through these studios many a time, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, I only worked for NBC all my life. I was under contract to them for 15 years. And I love them over there. They're great people.
They think highly of James Durante.
Thank you.
What Jimmy Durante. Joe Hyder now returning you to Monitor and Radio Central.
And a little bit belated happy birthday to Jimmy, 74, yesterday. This is Lainey Kazan.
Goodbye, my love. I know we're through. Tonight will be my last with you. Don't say a word. Don't even try. It's best that we kiss. Tomorrow, goodbye. Goodbye.
If you lived in the communist-ruled countries of Eastern Europe, chances are you'd listen to Radio Free Europe. It gets the truth through to people in those countries who would otherwise hear only the communist point of view. Support Radio Free Europe. Send your contribution to Box 1967, 1967, Mount Vernon, New York. At 17 minutes past the hour, you are on the Monitor Beacon.
Is Long John nebulous? Never. Join him on Versus, weeknights at 8, on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York. Down city streets, country lanes, and busy highways, Big Town USA is on the move with people. And WNBC, the voice of Big Town, brings you the sound of Big Town people on the move.
Do you have trouble hearing a child's laughter, the footsteps of a loved one, or the warm greeting of a friend? If you are one of those suffering a sense of isolation from loss of hearing, you should know that ear specialists seeking new cures for deafness need your help. They need the pledge of your inner ear structures to science so that research may be advanced. For information and pledge forms, write Deafness Research, Box 5000, New York 10017, New York. It's 10:18.
The New York City cabaret, where waitresses in topless attire first came on the scene in this city, was given an order the other day by the license commissioner to cover up or shut up. Tonight on Monitor, we're surveying the attitudes in other countries toward this type of exposure in public places. Irving R. Levine, NBC News, reports from Rome.
The topless craze has not yet reached Italy, and probably it won't. In fact, the bottomless, or if you prefer, the miniskirt craze has barely brushed this country. Italy is very conservative about these things. Most of the miniskirts worn hereabouts are seen on tourists. Very few Italian girls of good reputation are wearing them. Not only do men turn around and stare, they stare quite openly anyway in Italy, but vigilante-minded women are likely to scold the wearer of a miniskirt. But to get back to the topless craze, there are laws against this sort of thing in Italy. The Vatican influence is very strong in these matters. In fact, there are no burlesque shows in Rome. One tried to make a go of it a couple of years back. It was a very tame show, but the police very quickly closed it anyway. Nightclub entertainers do present exotic dances, but they are pretty carefully covered. The Italian screen is probably the most daring medium. Italian movies have long been famous for realism. But the realism is most often in the language and in the situations, not in nudity. A restaurant or bar with waitresses in topless costumes probably would do very well here. Italian men would be enthusiastic patrons, but the police would close it promptly. Even when a troupe of African dancers appeared on the Italian stage recently, they were required to wear covering garments that are unknown in their native Africa. Irving R. Levine, NBC News, Rome.
In New York, the African dancers were permitted to appear as they normally do, in some costumes that were topless. However, less aesthetic performances in topless attire have had a rough go of it. Our next report on the subject from Garrick Utley, NBC News, Berlin.
The topless craze which has swept the United States has not made it to Germany, at least not in the flesh. German newspapers and magazines have been devoting considerable amounts of print and, above all, pictures to the scantily clad dancers and waitresses in American restaurants and nightclubs. But there is no sign yet that the Germans are about to copy this latest bit of the American way of life. Germans are traditionally conservative about their deportment in public, but their reserve is being attacked from all sides, and their resistance has not been noticeably strong. Nudity, whether partial or total, is becoming more pronounced in magazines and films. The weekly mass circulation illustrated magazines, which may have household tips or political articles on the inside, invariably entice their readers with cover pictures of bikini-clad girls prancing on some southern sun-swept beach. The one magazine that did not went out of business. And movies in Germany often include scenes of nudity that would never be shown in the United States. This wave of the flesh, however, has brought political reactions. One of the major aims of West Germany's growing extreme right-wing National Democratic Party is to stop what it calls this attack on the integrity of the German woman. German laws on nudity are not very specific. Under the Erregung öffentlicher Ärgernis, or excitement of public offense, individual judges have to decide what constitutes excitement and offense. And in Germany, there are no legal precedents for topless waitresses. There are, however, precedents for nudity. The most recent and publicized one was a studio opened by a shrewd West Berlin businessman recently. For 10 marks, that's $2.50, anyone can walk in off Berlin's main business street and photograph nude models posing on a floodlit red stage. On opening night, Berlin's amateur photographers and others who are not even that fell all over themselves trying to get in. From that, it's not a very big step to topless waitresses. Garrick Utley, NBC News, Berlin.
From the reports we've heard this evening from various countries around the world, it would seem that nudity for nudity's sake is treated with indifference, if not rejection in most places. And in this country, it'll probably go the way of most fads. Out. New by the Serendipity Singers.
Thank you. Mr. Borga, you've been described at various times as the clown prince of Denmark, the unmelancholy Dane, and the Danish Noel Coward. Do you have any objection to these?
No, maybe Mr. Coward has.
As you know, there are those who frown on the idea of mixing comedy with the classics. How do you answer such
questions? Well, just let them frown, because it is nonsense, of course. They can't stop satire, and satire belongs everywhere. And why not in music? There is a world of jokes and musical anecdotes and things that happen during concerts, during rehearsals, that are absolutely among the funniest of all humorous or jokes, so to speak.
I think everybody admires someone who's made it in the entertainment world after an uphill effort, and I'm thinking particularly of your language problem when you came to this country. That was back 1940, I believe.
Yeah, but you'd have heard me when I was born. That was even worse.
Yes, that's true. Tell us how you learned to speak English.
Well, I don't know exactly how. I learned it the way everybody else learned it, I guess. By listening to it, and I went, by the way, I went to movies. In those days, it was for 15 cents. I could go in on 42nd Street in New York and see the same movie over three or four times. I could sit there all day. And I thought that helped me a lot. Yeah. Maybe I may add that by seeing the same thing over and over again, it was not for the entertainment value of the movie I went. It was, of course, to familiarize myself with the lines and hearing them and hear the actors say them and see their action to it. I learned quite a lot that way.
Mm-hmm. Your phonetic punctuation is world famous. Now, would you tell our monitor listeners how you happened to begin using this particular routine?
If there was a happening, it was during a rehearsal in Denmark many years ago. A couple of the actors had a bad cold. And they were sniffing and coughing and stopping every two or three words. And it struck me funny. And it apparently made an impression on my mind. And the stopping business and articulating made an impression to the extent that the idea for the phonetic punctuation later on.
One of the things I personally admire about your show, Mr. Borga, is that the jokes are all clean. Do you have a conviction about this?
No, I use soap.
One final question, Mr. Borga. When you made your debut as a comedian 22 years ago, you took a rather unusual step for a serious musician. Any regrets?
I didn't make my debut 22 years ago as a comedian. I never made my debut as a comedian.
Oh?
The only thing I ever made my debut with was as a concert pianist. From then on, I have integrated talk and this developed into more talk, maybe, than was called for at the time. But I think it is a matter of chemistry. I didn't decide to become a comedian. I didn't decide to become anything. It is a natural development of abilities, I think, that has, and the war and the situation in which I was when I came to America. But it was never intended, because there isn't such a thing as a what I do. I mean, you don't study to it. You don't. It comes naturally, or it doesn't come at all.
And it certainly comes naturally to Victor Borga, who belongs in the Hall of Fame of inventive comedians. That's a little bit of Nikki by Burt Bacharach. This is Henry Morgan. Hope you'll join me on Monitor again tomorrow afternoon. In fact, I'll be with you Sunday afternoons from now on. Our NBC station for Monitor in Hazleton, Pennsylvania is WAZL.
William Manchester, author of the controversial book The Death of a President, will meet the press in a one-hour special tomorrow on the NBC Radio Network.